niggas. I'm on their heels like a kid.
What's up, everybody? My name is Sid, and I've teamed up with the big homie Reg to bring y'all something new. Something we like to call Beyond the Scoreboard. Y'all be sure to review, rate, and subscribe. Let's get to it.
Welcome back to Beyond the Scoreboard. As always, I'm Sid. What's going on, Reg?
Man, what a week, bro. But, you know, this is my piece right here. So, ready to talk some sports like always.
Absolutely, absolutely. Life got a little hectic for all of us this week. So, here we are getting y'all this on a Friday this week. Yes, hopefully, next week we'll get it back to y'all on Wednesday. So, of course, we are 5-6 days behind now. But the Super Bowl took place and Tampa Bay ran all over, through, on top of, under. They did all in Kansas City on Sunday, which for the majority, I'd say, of the world was a shock. Yeah. Going into the game, I didn't see too many people picking Tampa Bay, honestly, especially not in the manner of the dominance that they actually showed on Sunday. But hey, what did you take from that game?
First of all, I would like to just say congratulations to Tom Brady and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, Coach Aarons. The Super Bowl went completely left to me. I definitely thought that Kansas City would be way more successful, at least offensively, than what they were. Defensively, I know they would have their you know, ups and downs. Time will kind of pick them apart. Maybe they get off the floor down a couple times, whatever. But I thought that they would have success versus the Tampa Bay Buccaneers defense. We knew going into it, Kansas City was their offensive line was just mismatched, if you would say. They had to move the right tackle to left tackle, guard was out, you know, all that good stuff. However, it looked as if the whole starting lineup was out. Like, they had pressure coming, I mean, from any and everywhere. I read something that said that the Tampa Bay Buccaneers blitzed the least amount of times in Super Bowl history. However, they were Patrick Mahomes was pressured more than any other quarterback ever in Super Bowl history.
Yeah.
So anytime something like that happened, it just shows the dominance of the defense. But you have to take your hat off to Tampa Bay's defense. They set the tone. They made plays early and often. And the biggest thing is they never let Kansas City catch rhythm, because once KC catch rhythm, then, you know, everything is kind of on the fly from there. But even when Pat Mahomes made someone miss and he brought extra time in the pocket, they still couldn't find rhythm. And to me, that was the vocal point, you know, of the game, is that Tampa Bay defense showed up all playoffs, and they did disappoint in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, and that's where I'm going to start with mine. The Tampa Bay's defense played lights out throughout the whole playoffs. From game one, where they played Washington and then took on Drew Brees and then Aaron Rodgers and then Pat Mahomes, that defense showed up every week in a manner that we hadn't seen them even perform throughout the regular season. So hats off to them for sure, because without them performing the way that they performed, these playoffs in general could have went a completely different way.
Right.
Of course, once again, like you touched on, the injuries with Kansas City, they went without their starting right tackle, Mitchell Schwartz, the whole season, and then got to this point and lost Eric Fisher in the conference game and I knew they was missing going into the season another guard from last year's Super Bowl, but then they lost somebody else on the way too. And once, like you say, it looked like a whole just a mixed match of a group of people that got put out there to try to block for Patrick Mahomes against a defensive line that all season long we've all respected and praised. We talked about during the conference championship game, Shaquille Barrett has showed something that we hadn't seen from him since last season. So he started coming along there. Then you had Sue and getting Vita Vea back. Like those guys, those guys really played their part. And credit to the secondary too for being able to, like you say, Tampa Bay sent four most of the game. They sent four. They got there most of the time, but they only sent four. So that put a whole lot of pressure on that secondary to be able to hold up against the likes of Travis Kelce, Tyreek Hill, and all those other speedsters that they have back there. Kansas City still could have had a chance in this game.
Definitely.
The early penalties really killed them. So Tampa Bay at the end of the first quarter, no, at the end of, at the beginning of the second quarter, got down to the goal line. Kansas City ended up getting the stop, holding it to 7-3 instead of letting them go up 14-3. And I felt like that was going to be a real big, once the game was over, we was going to look at that as a real big moment in the game. Then they ended up, giving the ball back. They ended up giving the ball back and got an interception, but the interception got called off because of a holding penalty.
And that was horrible. That wasn't holding to me, man. That was horrible.
And then you get them to fourth down, and Tampa Bay goes to kick a field goal, and you offsides.
Right.
So you had an opportunity for it to get the ball back without them scoring at all. Then you got an opportunity to get the ball back with them only scoring a field goal.
Yep.
You pull both of those, and they end up going to get a touchdown.
Story of the game. That was the story of the game for the Chiefs.
And then the two pass interference penalties right before halftime, the one that got called ended up tripping up Mike Evans.
Mm-hmm.
And then followed by the Tyrann Mathieu pass interference, which both of those honestly are questionable. If we're being completely honest about it, both of those calls were questionable because both of them were not catchable balls. They were uncatchable footballs more than anything else. Go ahead.
I hate to interrupt you, but I think the first one with Mike involving Mike Evans, I would have threw that ball just because Mike had him beat by a step or two. And I mean, Mike is 6'5". So if he's able to lay out for the ball, who knows? It did look slightly overthrown, but I'm just saying I want to give him that shot. It wasn't like he was running neck for neck or they were fighting for position and hand checking each other. Mike clearly had him beat by a step or two.
And like I said, that's why I say I didn't say it was completely, the wrong call to make, but it could have went either way. You could have not called that and not got any,
Right. I got it.
But then the Tyrann Mathieu one in the end zone.
That was bogus.
Yeah. So you get those two, and then Tampa Bay's able to go score another touchdown, and now you're looking at 21-6 going to half. So the penalties early really buried Kansas City, honestly. Because the momentum that they were gaining throughout the game immediately got killed by stupid penalties.
Yep.
And we already saw that momentum was going to be hard for them to come by the way that Tampa Bay's defense was playing. The other big thing about this, once again, Tampa Bay went out there and they played a dominant game. I'm not taking anything away from Tampa Bay. Andy Reid got out coached, and that's not something that we saw happening going into this game. Early on, when you looked at it and you saw, okay, this is what Tampa Bay going to do. They're going to rush for, and they're going to keep a deep man over Tyreek Hill the entire game, or at least that's what they're doing right now. There was never an adjustment of, okay, well, shit, we just going to try chances at running the football more. But even more so to me than that, because I didn't expect them to even run the football. But coming out of the half, you saw that they were successful with it. But even more so than that, there was never a point in that game where Andy Reid or whoever sat down and decided, let's start taking all the underneath stuff. They're not going to give us nothing deep. Let's start doing some more underneath stuff. That never happened. Let's start dinking and dunking down the field. And that never happened, and that was pretty confusing to me. It was always, look, it's all or nothing. We go keep going all or nothing.
Yeah.
And that helped bury them as well.
So that didn't catch me off guard. One thing I like about Andy Reid is that he stick to his guns. Now this time it came around to bite him in the butt. But just like I've been praising Buffalo for their trust in Josh Allen, Pat Mahomes have that same, he have the same characteristics for his concerns with the KC offense. They always put the ball in his hands. We've seen time and time again this year whenever they needed to ice a game in situations where almost 80% of the NFL will run the ball, Andy Reid still keeps the ball in Pat Mahomes' hand and let him decide, you know, the fate of their team. So I knew it was never going to turn into, if they're going to play us this way, let's allow our running back to pick this hole and hit this hole and take these this positive 4 or 5 yards. I knew it. That's just not Andy Reid's style, especially with a guy like Pat Mahomes, who
That doesn't explain why you don't start taking anything underneath. Like I say, I didn't see him actually depending on his run game either. Just because I don't have no trust in their run game. I know damn well they don't. So, but I was more concerned about why not switch your game plan to start taking advantage of the 5 to 10 that they're giving y'all, especially when they're keeping a guy deep over on top of Tyreek Hill.
Well, I mean, coming out of halftime, they tried that, and they had some drops, which made it a third and long. And then he hit Kelsey with a very catchable ball, and Kelsey just flat-out dropped it. And they had to punt the ball. Tampa Bay got the ball. Tom Brady went put up another touchdown, and that put a whole lot of separation in the game. But they did adjust. They did come out of halftime running the ball, had some success. They took a couple underneath passes, but Kelsey dropped that ball. And from there, Tampa Bay got the ball, scored again. I mean, at that point, you have to take shots and kind of get back into the game because, I mean, it's the Super Bowl. It's mid-third quarter, and your defense can't find a way to get off the field. So,
not arguing against that at all, but what about the first two quarters?
That's just not their style. I mean, think they were going to come? Nothing about Kansas City and Super Bowl and Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes, Tyreek Hill and Kelsey. No, I don't care what you do. Nothing about that screen we're going to come out and take underneath. When we played them, they didn't go deep as much, but they still took a lot of medium, 15 to 20 yard throws, which is pretty medium for Pat Mahomes when you think about it. He took a lot of those shots and connected on quite a few, but we defended a lot too. Just like when the Raiders beat them this year, it was the same thing. The Raiders sat back, played a lot of cover two safety highs, just like we did, and they lived with it. They didn't just adapt and say, okay, let's turn into this short yardage team, because obviously that's what the defense is trying to do.
Yeah, of course. And my argument isn't they saw what was out there and they should have, because like you say, they've seen that before. So I'm not saying they should have adjusted because of exactly what the defense was playing. I'm saying they should have adjusted because they're getting pressure with four and our O-line has nothing that they could do with these guys. And they keeping a guy on top of Tyreek, but they keeping a guy on top of Tyreek and they getting four to us damn near every time.
Okay, now we're on the same page.
Yeah.
All right. And I just really feel like when you really think about how disruptive that D-line was versus KC O-line, if you go underneath all day, of course you'll be a little bit more successful. You'll complete a little bit more balls, but how much of a threat are you at winning the game? And I feel like Kansas City kind of tapped into desperation mode a little bit too soon. But that's just who they are. That's just who they are. They are a very bold football team, and offensively, they feel like they have no limitations. So that's just who they are, really.
And now they know that they do have limitations, and that's just what I'm saying. That was Andy Reid being our coach. Whether you want to say it was him sticking to his guns, or you know him, that he believed in, but he got out coached in that.
Yeah,
the last thing for me to point out in that Super Bowl was just that even with the way that that game turned out, Patrick Mahomes didn't have a bad game. Patrick Mahomes isn't the reason why they lost that game. Mm-hmm. There was, and even late in the game, we watching this man down three scores, and he's making passes that are catchable and unbelievable, and they just weren't being caught.
Yeah.
So when you get down to it and you look back at it and the stats, you're going to be like, oh, he had a bad game. But, man, that dude made some passes that, if caught, could have changed a whole lot on how that game played out.
So, you know, I'm a huge Andy Reid fan. It was hurting me to even almost say he got outcoached, because just like you just said with the Patrick Mahomes situation, forget the passes. What he had to do to even have a chance to throw the football alone was impressive. And Tyreek Hill dropped two. Travis Kelce dropped two. And I think one of those was a touchdown for Tyreek Hill. And he had a ball that went off of Robinson's hand, I believe, in the end zone when he brought extra time.
Yeah.
So you're talking two touchdowns and maybe three first down drops. I mean, balls hit him in the hand. Didn't wind up hitting Tyreek in the face. I mean, if you give him those balls back, we're talking about a ball game. And all this underneath stuff is completely out of the window.
And the pass he made parallel to the ground that ended up hitting Pringle in his hands in the back of the end zone. Everybody's favorite stat from Sunday, which is mine too, is Patrick Mahomes ended up running 497 yards for his life. That's unheard of. That is unheard of, but he still put them in positions to be successful. But like you say, man, we saw drops from Travis Kelce early on. Tyreek struggled to even get anything early on in general. So that game was really lost from the start.
I mean, to sum it up, it's classic football. When you think of the Tom Brady's, and I hate to even put other quarterbacks in the conversation of Tom Brady, so I'm just going to say, when you think about how do you stop the great quarterbacks, right? We're talking about the Peyton Mannings, the Drew Brees, you know, all those guys, the historically great quarterbacks. It start with pressure. That's even a formula for beating the great Tom Brady. Is get to him and try to get to him with just four. If you're able to make him, you know, throw that ball just a second faster or not be able to go through his progression as calmly as he would like, those kind of things rattle quarterbacks, you know. So
100%. If you can get to any quarterback with a four with just four, then you in winning position. If you can get that before against any quarterback, you in winning position.
And they did more than just get to Pat Mahomes. They were literally, I mean, it was one time I saw and I think it was the first or second quarter. Dude was in shotgun, caught the snap, took three steps back. Before he could finish his step, he already had a defender coming where he had to dodge. Yeah. That's just crazy. You know what I'm saying? That's crazy.
Yeah. So at the end of that, Tom Brady extending his greatness, seven Super Bowls, which is more than any other franchise even has in the NFL. This is something most likely we're not going to see again from a player in general, but especially not a quarterback. 7 out of 10 Super Bowls, 5 Super Bowl MVPs, I think it is he has, and coming back for more. And I'm quite sure we both agree that we expect Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid to be right back in this position next year and probably for years to come as well.
True. And just closing out about Tom Brady, you can't forget about the historic season he had this year. And he did it at the age of 43. You know, no training camps. We know the whole story by now. New team, first team to win a Super Bowl in their hometown. And then he did it in a tough division. And you can't forget about the quarterbacks he defeated. I don't want to give him all the credit, but that's normally how football works, you know, when a team win. But don't forget about the teams that they beat to get here, you know, to the Super Bowl, and the quarterbacks he matched up against to get to the Super Bowl. So when you put all that together, that's just time being time.
So we usually start out with our Saints, but of course we didn't make the Super Bowl, so we didn't deserve to start out this show. But now let's look at just some Saints news overall over this past week before we head into some Houston Texans talk. I want to start with, we didn't address the Chris Richard hire last week and what that means for our Saints and our secondary going forward. What were your thoughts on that hire?
I definitely liked it. So, first of all, Aaron Glenn, he's one of those guys that I feel like is caught in the middle. Like, you know, sometimes he has the secondary looking great. Then there's times where we're like, man, We look bad. Yeah. So I wasn't heartbroken that we lost him, but bringing in a guy like Chris, I mean, this is just flat out unbelievable. You know, we spoke about it a little bit off camera, but this is a guy that, to me, I don't want to jump the gun, but I really feel like he's defensive coordinator worthy. You know, we kind of know his history and everything he put together in Seattle and all that good stuff. So, I mean, that alone now, and like we spoke about, you mentioned his time in Dallas, how he kind of turned Dallas defense around, had Byron Jones them looking like something. So I'm really looking forward to it. To be honest, I mean, I'm pretty happy about the outcome of who filled that position. So I'm really looking forward to seeing what he could do with our secondary. I'm really hoping that we can keep Janoris Jenkins and give him a fair share. I just don't want to lose Jenkins. You know, then we playing from behind the eight ball, trying to piece together a secondary or whatnot. So I have all the faith in the world in him. And I think if anything, we improve more than take a step back here.
I was excited about the hire as well. When it comes to losing coaches, especially when they get hired off to go somewhere else.
We lost a lot, too.
you want to be sure that you're at least getting a coach of the same quality that you're replacing. And in this situation, we probably got better.
Exactly. I didn't want to be
a fan of Aaron Glenn. I'm probably more of a fan of Aaron Glenn than you are. But we probably upgraded. Chris Richard is somebody who sat out last year after being a coordinator, the D coordinator in Dallas for a while. And like you say, turning that defense around. And he's somebody who honestly should be a head coach. Should be getting a head coach shot at this point. So he's not a head coach. He's not even a defensive coordinator. Mm-hmm. And you're able to get him to come to New Orleans to be the secondary's coach.
Exactly.
That's a steal.
Exactly.
And I'm really looking forward to what he's going to be able to attribute and bring out of our defense, our secondary players going forward.
And I just didn't want to be disrespectful to Aaron Glenn, although you do like him a little bit more than me. But
even
if we would have lost Dennis Allen and we would have hired him as the defensive coordinator, I still would have never had no complaints, to be honest with
you. Yeah. Absolutely. So what else happened after our show last week? Drew Brees restructured his deal to set up basically his retirement. He cut it down to the $1 million veteran minimum. Saved us about $25 million for now. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, that post June 1st retirement is going to come. And, you know, that's going to be that. So soon, in the next week or so, I know they said we should be getting a formal announcement about Drew and his retirement. And then we'll take that time out to really address his his career and what he's meant to New Orleans and all of that. We'll save that for then. But that saved us about $24, $25 million right there. And then today, Nick Easton got released, something else most of us saw coming, and that saved us another almost $6 million in cap. So we've already dug in $30 million into the almost $100 million that we were in a hole for. Mm-hmm. And I'm quite sure now there's a whole lot more deals that's going to come after this, probably a couple more cuts, but mostly re-signings and extensions going forward in order. Mm-hmm. Yeah, restructures in order to get us where we need to be cap-wise.
Yep, absolutely.
So let's turn our attention to the Houston Texans. We took our show over last week talking about the Deshaun Watson situation. So we're probably not going to touch too much on that right now. But this morning, J.J. Watt was released. They agreed to part ways, and he asked to be released versus being traded. So being doing right by him, they went ahead and cut him so he can be free to choose where he wants to go and be able to do so before actual free agency kicks off in a month. How do you feel about J.J. Watt as a player, where he is in his career right now, and what he can mean to the next team?
I definitely think J.J. Watt still have a couple years of football left in him. Of course, he won't be the defensive player of the year, that we've known him to be in the highlight of his career. But I still think him being a veteran presence, a guy that can play inside or outside, and more than likely, he's going to go try to play for a contender. So if you're going to tell me that he's going to get the opportunity to work on side of Aaron Donald or even go to Tampa and they bring back Shaq Barrett and the rest of the game, anything of that nature, I like what we have. I like what that team would have adding him. He goes to Pittsburgh and he wants to play with his brother. Anything of that nature, I just like that situation. He's definitely a guy who can win one-on-one matchups against guys that's not top tackles at this point. But just thinking that, he's just going to be a pushover just because he's late in his career, that's not going to happen. I think he's going to be a very valuable piece to a team this offseason.
And if I'm a team, I definitely don't hesitate to, like you say, kick him inside. That'll play a whole lot more against that interior O-line these days. But I agree with you. He's definitely still going to be serviceable and probably even more than that, right outside of the top tier of defensive ends for a couple more years. I wouldn't be shocked. Where do you think is the best place for him to end up at this point? Just give me three. Give me three teams that you would...
Oh, counting like salary and all that good stuff?
Yeah, we counting all of that. Yeah. Let's take salary into consideration.
San Francisco, because I believe in order to get the quarterback that they want, they're going to have to part ways with a lineman or a pick or something. So I would like to see him play in a situation with Nick Bosa over there in San Francisco. That'd be lights out. I'm not sure what the Rams cap is looking like right now, but if they can bring him on board, definitely. And I would have to go Pittsburgh. If he can get in over there, I think that's a home run hit for him.
Yeah. I'm going to start with Kansas City. That defense, secondary more so than their front seven. Mm-hmm. But if you can add somebody like a J.J. Watt to a team that we all think, when healthy, is a championship team, that just makes that road to the next Super Bowl even easier. So I'll start there. I'll go Pittsburgh, even though I really want J.J. Watt to have a chance to win. And I don't consider Pittsburgh a true contender as they stand right now. But, of course, the T.J. Watt connection and also Derek Watt, I want to say, is over there right now, too, as their fullback. So, of course, that's a no-brainer that's a place that he's going to look. And then I think my third team would have to be, I do like the San Francisco. I like San Francisco. If they end up making the move that they want to make for Deshaun Watson, it's probably going to include, like you said, at least one of those up-and-coming defensive linemen that they have.
Yeah.
And if they can, if they part ways with that and can still bring in a J.J. Watt, man, they just gaining on top of gaining.
And there's so many other places that he can go and be serviceable.
He can go anywhere and be serviceable. Yeah. Like, he can go anywhere and improve a defensive line for sure.
Exactly. Yeah. But when you throw in the fact of caps and availability and everything else, then that's the three that come to my mind.
If even you tell right me now, that, especially yeah, right now, before, yeah. you know, like I say, teams are just now starting to open up their cap room and things of that nature. So in about 2 weeks, if he lasts that long out there on the market, we'll be able to look at a whole longer list of teams and be like, oh, okay, now I can see him going here or here.
Yeah, because if Tennessee gets Clowney, if they decide to bring Clowney back, he's healthy. They bring him back for, I'd just say, $6 to $8 million and then land Watt as well. That'll give them a nice 1-2 punch, way better than what they had last year with Clowney missing almost all of last season and Vic Beasley also doing that. And they thought that was going to be their combo. So Beasley already gone. If they do, like I said, if they do bring Clowney back and you add Watt, although that may not be the best combo or tandem of all time. Yeah. That's much better than what you had last year, and that it improved a defense that wasn't that bad to begin with. So, I mean, the possibilities are endless for Watt. It's just going to be the best fit for him.
And you have to look at the Super Bowl champion, Tampa Bay. Mm-hmm. Like I say, to me and from everything that I'm seeing, they're most likely going to lose Shaq Barrett. So if they do end up losing Shaq Barrett, you plug in J.J. Watt as your pass rusher, as another pass rusher over there. And, yeah, it's a fall off, but it ain't a great one, you know.
Yeah.
And that keeps them in position to
definitely
to repeat for next year, or to at least get to, you know, be in that position to do so. Yep. So let's look at Houston's organization as a whole right now. They started off with a complete change in their front office. Everybody who was there probably 4 months ago is completely gone now at this point. with that came the GM hire, which sent Deshaun Watson into demanding his trade. And then you get a head coach who I don't think there's much expectations out of him within the organization and damn sure not outside of the organization. It's just them getting somebody in the building at this point.
Yep.
And now you have the release of J.J. Watt. And you're in a predicament where you don't have a first rounder for this year. You don't have a second rounder for this year. And next year, I want to say next year they shake back and they have all of their picks as of now. But for this year, they definitely, like I say, no first rounder, no second rounder. So you're starting in the third round. So you already behind the eight ball.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't have much cap. Before they released J.J. Watt, they only had about $4 million. So now they're sitting at about $21 million cutting J.J. Watt. So what do you see for this organization going forward?
Like I've been telling you for a minute, I do not like nothing about Houston's front office. Like going back to, you know, last year or whatever. But like you said, they clean house and they're starting over. I really would wish that they would just take the Jacksonville approach and say, hey, we were good for a little bit. We had some scratches when we made the playoffs. And all of a sudden, every player on our team that meant something to us, they went left. For some reason, they don't want to be here. Instead of just continually to let these guys suck their well dry and just keep paying them, let's do what's best for our organization and let's move these guys where, you know, we can rebuild and that would make the rebuilding process easier with all those picks or whatnot. So, like you said, they only have $4 million to begin with or near about. But releasing J.J. Watt made all the sense in the world to me. It's good for him. He gets to pick whatever team he wants to go play for. And then you saved, I think it was $17.5 million. So, of course, that's good. The interesting thing about Houston is they're one of those teams where they have the capability to release a lot of guys and save a lot of money. So I'll just start with a couple of their star players. You have a guard that they just signed 2 years ago. They can release him and save some money. Also, they center. They want to bring both of them back. The five guys who they had panned out to be the start for each position, those guys never got a chance to play together last season. Yeah. So they're really big on their guard and center combination. Watson is very familiar with the center, so of course they want to keep them together. But if you don't know if Watson is going to be here, then what's the purpose of keeping the center? So if they can trade Watson, then I'm releasing the center as well and save that money. Brandon Cooks, who stay hurt at this point, he's carrying, I think he got $33 million or something like that left on his deal, but none of it is guaranteed. Okay. I'm sorry?
No, I was just saying, okay.
Yeah, so they can release him and move on from that and save money, you know, from his contract going forward. David Johnson, Jesus. So, you know, he was due $11 million. This year it goes down to $9 million. Once again, none of that is guaranteed. They can release him and move forward. Will Fuller. Damn, they like that. Almost every guy that means something to him.
I think he's just a flat out free agent.
Yeah. But I'm saying more than likely they're gonna try to get him to come back, especially now that they have space. But I was reading reports of this had to be maybe like in October, November, was saying because he stayed healthy, and if he continued to stay healthy and finish out the year, which he did, there was reports that he could be seeking up to $15 million a year per year. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's just going, that's neither here nor there with the situation that they're in now. But they can really move on. And their corner, Roby, Bradley Roby. So he's the same way. Because he got suspended, his contract has a void clause in it, which will allow them to release him, and he won't be having nothing else guaranteed. So they can also do that. The only thing about that, they don't have another corner on the team that we know. So if you do that, then you know, the secondary is already thin. You just lost your best corner. But they're in a situation where they can fix everything. And we never even mentioned about the possibilities of trading Deshaun Watson to gather draft picks back. Yeah. So if you're going to clean house, this is the time to do it. I'm releasing everybody who I can get from underneath. Mm-hmm. And you trade Watson. And I mean, 2 years from here, you kind of sitting like Jacksonville, all this money because you're not paying nobody, and you got some picks under your belt as well.
And so I agree for the most part. Texans are looking at a rebuild either way. It's just which way are they going to go about? Are they going full rebuild, or are they going to rebuild around a Deshaun Watson who was disgruntled and at this point don't even want to be there?
Nope. I wouldn't.
Oh yeah, well, we know you wouldn't, Reg, but then, but once again, they seem reluctant to come off of Deshaun Watson, which once again I 100% understand. I definitely understand their position, and it seems like something they're willing to fight for. So let's just look at it that way. Let's look at it as they don't let Deshaun Watson go anywhere. They bring back the guard and the center that you was talking about because, once again, that starting five up front didn't even get to play together last season. And then you part what you're parting ways. Of course, you've already parted ways with J.J. Watt. You're going to lose Will Fuller. Somebody's going to pay Will Fuller. You get rid of Brandon Cooks, and you get rid of Roby, you know.
And David Johnson.
So you start off having way more than what you got now. Like, after you cut or part ways with those guys, you're probably looking at, what, 30 more mil than what you got right now. Easy. So you're looking at 50 going into the free agency. Like I say, the draft for them don't start till three. Don't start till round three. So free agency, they just going to have to look to overpay guys, honestly, depending on the way they really want to go about it. Like you say, they can take the Jacksonville approach, which is going to be harder for them if they stick with Deshaun Watson because you have a top five quarterback. So it's going to be harder for you to actually take that Jacksonville approach. Mm-hmm. So once again, you're going to have to come out your pocket and overpay guys in free agency to be able to make your team worth anything, because no matter what, you're not going to be out here getting top three picks, most likely, if you roll it with Deshaun Watson as your quarterback.
Yep.
I can see that happening. I can see them going that route. I agree with you. I feel like the best route is to part ways with Deshaun Watson, not because he's disgruntled, but because he's going to make your rebuild a whole lot easier. Exactly. Like you say, you're going to get two first round picks, probably two more that's going to be a second or third round picks, and then you're probably going to get an established player for him as well. And that's an amazing start, and it keeps you from really putting off a true rebuild for another year. You get to actually start that right now in this offseason. And with the new front office that they have, new head coach, letting go of J.J. Watt, who's been the franchise, honestly, for the past 10 years. Like you say, there's no better opportunity that they have to really start over than they do right now. Yeah. And that's something that they probably should truly take advantage of. We've known Houston to not be this great organization when it comes to their front office since they've got to Houston. Like, since they became the Houston Texans. So I don't have faith that that's going to just pick up now. You hope so. Mm-hmm. But I can definitely see them going the route of, we're going to hold on to Deshaun Watson. We're going to try to rebuild around Deshaun Watson. And we're going to roll like that. But for me, it would be best to use Deshaun Watson to get everything that you can get and help that transition you into a better place, to where it's not putting you in a hole for, instead of looking at five down years, maybe now you're looking at two.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And I definitely agree with that. And I definitely think they honestly will move Deshaun Watson. I just think it's the build up. You got to get all that you can get for him. Somebody's probably already willing to overpay, but you're looking for somebody to overpay. It's so much time before all this stuff get kicking off that, I mean, they playing with house money. They can sit back and wait and be comfortable. Wow. Worst case scenario, we have Deshaun Watson.
Exactly.
Worst case scenario. So, yeah, you can't lose with that.
Exactly. What else I wanted to talk about? Carson Wentz. Me and you talked about him off air probably, 2 days ago. Mm-hmm. We talked about him and what he may be fetching for Philadelphia over. I know Schefter reported after the Super Bowl that within the week he'd probably be traded. Mm-hmm. From everything I've seen, it's looking like most likely it'll be the Colts. Right. I saw Chicago had their hat in the ring as well. Where do you see as the best place for him?
The Colts. A team where not if, and that's only because they got an O-line. This is pending. They O-line stay together. No injuries. Nothing crazy like that. With the addition of Jonathan Taylor emerging later on in the season, mm-hmm. as a nice running back in this league. I know they're going to lose T.Y. more than likely, but if you can protect Carson Wentz, because, I mean, that's when we saw him at his best, I believe in what they can put around him. So, the defense kind of overachieved this year, so I'm thinking that they're going to take a step back. But overall, you would still have a nice unit. And yeah. I just want to see how committed they are once they get Carson Wentz. Like, that's the big thing. It's one thing to get him, but then you have to go out and get pieces that fit his style. And to me, that's what it's going to come down to. You know, we're losing T.Y. Are you going to go after a Juju? Or are you going to look to draft a receiver, trade for? Like, I want to see what they're going to do to fit his style of play. You know, that's what I'm really looking forward to seeing.
I like the Colts as well. Michael Pittman was the guy you didn't just bring up who came on strong late.
That's your USC guy.
Yeah, he came on strong late last season. I like New England too, though. New England is in a position. New England is in a position for one to where they got to get another quarterback. They're not bringing Cam Newton back. They already came out and said that. We already know that they don't believe in Jarrett Stidham as much as we were led to believe going into last season. Yeah. And I find it hard to believe that this is an organization who's really itching to get out there and start fresh with a rookie quarterback. So they're gonna be in play to get a veteran quarterback of some sort. And I think Carson Wentz would probably be the perfect one to be able to get in there and try to mold. But then once again, just like the Colts are in a better position than New England is at this moment. But like you say, regardless of what quarterback New England brings in, the talent around them has to get better. So they have to be committed to bettering out the receiver position, the running back position, tight ends, all of that, honestly. Mm-hmm. But I like what Carson Wentz. First of all, I think me and you both like Carson Wentz about the same amount. Mm-hmm. To where we felt like those first couple years, he was definitely the best amongst the bunch. And the injury has done something to him to make him less of that. But we both, I think, believe that he can still get back to what he was the year he was on track to win an MVP.
Mm-hmm.
So I like I said, I like the Colts. I could definitely see that happening. To me, that's probably the most likely destination, but I wouldn't be shocked if a New England got in there and grabbed him up and was able to be successful with him going forward as well.
I got you. Yeah, and I definitely don't see him being a good fit in New England. I think New England, they would excel with more of a veteran QB like a Matthew Stafford, somebody who's I don't want to say is more of an old-fashioned type quarterback.
Yeah, but that's what it
is. I think at this point, New England is probably going to have to just really draft the quarterback and just groom them to be what they want to be. Unless something like, you know, Jimmy G comes available through trade. Yeah. They're going to acquire Deshaun Watson, something like that. But for the most part, I see them drafting a quarterback and going forward.
Yeah, and I definitely – I think that's the last thing they want to do. Of course, if it comes down to it.
Yeah.
But like you say, they're going to throw their hat in at Deshaun Watson. If Jimmy G becomes available, they're going to take a shot at that. Carson Wentz. They tried for Matthew Stafford. Like, they want a guy who's already – had his feet wet in this league, right, and they know could be a starting quarterback in the league, despite starting from scratch.
Yep.
So we'll definitely see on that one.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else you wanted to address today, man?
No, I think that's it, man. I think we got all the football out of us, man. We got a lot to, like you said, when the week's coming down to free agency and guys are starting to get signed and more releases happen, we'll have more to talk about. And definitely next week we'll have more Saints talk. And I'm looking forward to bringing on a guest or two and starting to break down these key additions and things for other teams besides the Saints. So,
absolutely. And we're also, once again, football season is over, but we never stop talking about football. But we also got the NBA season going on right
now. Yes, sir.
There's a lot of exciting things going on. Going on throughout the NBA right now too that we're going to have to address and look over. So we'll definitely start putting some more NBA talk in here next week. But for this week, man, that's all we got.
I'm in the league, you boys not in my league. If you listen close, I'm coaching 10 keys. Cause the boy hella dope without pushing a blanco. Still stabbing bitches like 94 in the Bronco. If it's about the money, I'm leaving them hoes pronto. If I don't do nothing, I'm about Lonzo.